Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mayank Prakash to the broadcast. Mayank is the Chief Digital and Information Officer of the United Kingdom's Department of Work and Pensions, the UK's largest public service department, which impacts over 22 million citizens. Mayank is responsible for IT infrastructure, data, and security, as well as for driving the implementation and adoption of digital technologies to meet emerging customer and citizen expectations. Mayank was named the most influential person in UK IT for 2017 by UK Tech 50. Prior to joining the DWP, Mayank was a managing director at Morgan Stanley, where he was responsible for global wealth and investment management technology. And prior to that, he was the CIO of Sage UK, the group CIO of iSoft, and the international CIO for Avaya. Mayank received his MBA from the Manchester Business School. He currently serves on the board of the Tech Partnership in London and for the DWP. I recently caught up with Mayank by phone from his office in London, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle one, people, as he shared how the DWP has developed a digitally literate workforce through both training and hiring. Principle two, infrastructure, as he discussed how the DWP avoids accumulating technical debt by using intermediaries between back-end systems of record and front-end data production services. Principle five, external partnerships, as Mayank discussed how the DWP uses diverse user personas to ensure it meets the needs of over 22 million British citizens. We also discussed his reasons for leaving the private sector in favor of the public sector, how he stays up to date with new technology through education, and his view on bimodal approach to IT, and as well as a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey highlights the tremendous upside to developing a network of expert advisors in various areas of technology and the surprising willingness of top experts to provide free advice.
The third advice is around advisors. The CEO and the CIO of HSBC have built a board of technology advisors consisting of market experts in various fields of technology. This is a brilliant idea. You'd be amazed how many top experts are willing to share the knowledge and provide free advice. There is absolutely nothing for you to lose here and so much to gain. You can take the advice, you can reject the advice, you can have a think about it. But once you put a bunch of smart and experienced industry experts in a room and just brainstorm, you can validate or invalidate your directions and open your mind to other views as well.
Tune in next week when Mickey discusses partnering with startups. Mayank Prakash, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hello, Peter. Good to talk.
Yes, a pleasure to speak with you today. Mayank, I thought for those who might not be familiar with it, especially the non-UK portion of our audience, I wonder if you could take a moment and describe the Department for Work and Pensions in the United Kingdom, an organization that you were a part of.
Yeah, so very simply put, Department for Work and Pensions is one of the largest organizations in Western Europe. It is the largest public sector organization in the United Kingdom. But perhaps the best way for me to describe the Department for Work and Pensions is to describe it from the perspective of the 22 million people whose lives we change. If you live in the UK or have ever lived in the UK, you would have come across our services. We support children when their parents are separating so that they have a better quality of life. We look after employed people who are of working age to make sure that they have fulfilling lives and are in work, and that produces better outcomes for them and for society. We look after disabled people so that we can explore the potential of disabled people as the mark of a civilized society and the right thing to do. And we look after retired people And we're all living longer lives, Peter. So increasingly, we touch everybody if you live in the United Kingdom. So that's what we do.
Excellent. And you oversee digital, and you're the Chief Digital and Information Officer. And I wonder if you can explain that role within this context.
So the simplest way for me to explain it is it's leading all classical things that are around data, information, technology, infrastructure, and security. The digital aspect of it is to pursue a goal to reimagine customer experiences, to make DWP more efficient and effective. And that is necessary because we spend in well over £6 billion running DWP. If you look at the total amount of money that we spend across all of DWP, we are larger than the GDP of most countries, barring five. So if we took all of our spend and ranked it as a country, we would be the seventh largest country in the world. So that's why we want to become more efficient and effective by reimagining customer experiences. And we do this not for a profit motive. We do this to improve outcomes for society. And that could be, like, say, for example, getting more people into work or making sure retired people have a predictable financial security. It's pursuing those outcomes for lives of people we live together with.
And I wonder, given such a diverse array of people, naturally, who you deal with, millennials through to older citizens of the United Kingdom, how do you think about, my words, not yours, but different personas or different experiences, the different ways in which your citizenry wishes to interact with DWP? How do you take those into consideration when there is such a diversity of people with whom you work?
So you're right, we work with a diversity on any dimension. So you've talked about a few dimensions of diversity, age being one, gender is another one, and geographical footprint is another one, and backgrounds, social backgrounds is another one. We work on all kinds of diverse footprint. So first we do what pretty much any large organization with a diverse footprint does, which is we look at not a one-size-fits-all strategy, but active segmentation of our customers is to make sure we are targeting our services to get the best impact. Secondly, what we look at is not all of these customers as a cohort. We ask ourselves, what is the problem we are trying to solve? And you can hear it in the purpose that I'm articulating for the organization. I'm not saying we work with people of working age. I'm saying we work with people of working age so that they are in work. So that's the purpose. Now, that purpose then leads to what do we need to do to get more people into work? Or that purpose then leads to what do we need to do to support more children when their parents are separating? And that then leads to active segmentation and better delivery of targeted services.
Very interesting. And I know that from our past conversations, that part of what you've been focusing on through your digital transformation has also been the simplification of the technology portfolio. And I know that for a lot of organizations in the public and the private sectors, this is quite a challenge, especially ones that are of an older vintage that may have, for example, technology from various decades housing very important data. And the process of modernizing that and simplifying it can be quite a challenge, to say the least. I wonder if you could talk a bit about the way in which you've thought about this challenge and the implications on the broader digital transformation.
So you're right. We have that challenge. In any organization that has been at the leading edge for decades has the challenge of accumulating history. That can both be an advantage as well as a constraint for us to look forward. It can be an advantage because I have got diverse, mature analytics on data that a new organization won't have because we've matured it over decades for ourselves. We have had the pleasure of being a leading organization across industries and sectors, and certainly in Europe, way back in the 60s. So with pensions, we automated and put on what was the precursor to mainframes and all of the country's pensions statements and pensions accounts. And when you lead across with leading edge technology in the 60s, obviously it became obsolete in the 80s and we replaced it. And now we are replacing that generation of technologies and actively building our future. We look at this as an evolutionary opportunity for ourselves, where we want to reduce the tech debt very actively, and we want to build the future of our services equally actively. And for most people I talk to, this can sound like a bit of, I want to eat my cake and have it too, but I do. And the way we do it is use data to intermediate or disintermediate the back-end systems of record from the front-end digital products and services that we are rapidly growing.
How do you think about culture as it relates to innovation?
So we need to lead in teams to achieve outcomes. The second big takeaway is, how do we create a culture that is inquisitive, that is creative? Because in our world, the possibilities of what you could do are constantly changing. And innovation is not something that happens in a particular room done by a set of people. But how do you culturally create an inquisitive culture which is curious to learn from others, to learn about new possibilities and explore them, experiment with them? So those are two big cultural takeaways for us.
And to what extent do you see, as you're fostering cultural change, Mayank, to what extent does it require retraining of existing employees, and to what extent does it mean bringing in external employees or partners, as the case may be, to provide something new, perhaps, that was missing previously?
And you're right, training serves a purpose to change skills. It's very difficult in our experience to train people to change their values. And so we are doing a whole series of interventions to inspire people to think about their values and think about how they engage with people who have a different set of values. And that can't be told to people. People have to want to do it. So we're doing interventions in that space is to inspire people to think about their values. But we're also bringing in new people so that we can learn from them. There is nothing like seeing somebody demonstrate the culture that we'd like in practice rather than talking about in theory. And that is transformative. It's like a catalyst in driving change in that team.
And then I wonder also, how do you think about the, as I mentioned before, you're the Chief Digital and Information Officer. Some who hold those two titles think about those as, in fact, two different sides, two different teams, in fact. And an extension of this is the idea of a bimodal IT that some adhere to, others don't. The idea that there is a portion of the team that is managing traditional IT responsibilities, and then there is a portion that is working more on the art of the possible, that is perhaps a bit more forward-looking in some ways, a bit more innovative. And I wonder how you think about either bifurcating the team in these sorts of segments, or whether it is something that's a bit more combined. Philosophically, where do you stand?
So philosophically, I sit in the space of what is it that we need to do to achieve outcomes? And that's an outside-in view rather than inside-out view. If I have a mainframe platform that works fine to deliver outcomes, I actually don't think there's anything wrong with it. That is perfectly good value for money. It's stable, it's reliable, it has no or viruses or vulnerabilities largely, that's brilliant. I keep running that. And because that helps me run my business today, why is that run by a group of have-nots and there are another group of haves who get to wear cool t-shirts and caps? We should distribute cool t-shirts and caps to all people who create value for us. Because the reality of our business, like any other mature, large business that's been around for decades, is we have products that run our business at any given point in time, and we have new products that we are designing to reimagine our business at any given point in time. And the combination of these two is unlikely to go away. They're both here to stay. So we pursue being the best at both running ourselves well, efficiently and effectively, and we have in the last few years, taken over 30% of our cost out by running ourselves more efficiently and effectively, and that's hundreds of millions of pounds. But equally, we want to transform ourselves at a pace, and there we have taken millions, quite literally 8 million people to a digital channel that is UK's fastest growing digital service in the financial services world to check your pension statement. And so we want to do both. Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to ask you, Mayank, you've had quite a diverse career. You are not a lifelong public servant. You worked, in fact, mostly in the private sector. You worked for companies like Alcatel-Lucent as a divisional or a geography CIO. You've been the international CIO of Avaya, the CIO of Sage, one of the largest software companies in the UK. You've been a financial services technology executive at Morgan Stanley. What drew you to government service after this long and diverse set of experiences across a number of leading companies in the private sector?
A few things, Peter. First, the opportunity to transform on a massive scale. The government organizations were a few decades behind the best across industries. And so the opportunity to leapfrog and be the best at what we do is one of the reasons why I joined. The second reason is the purpose of what the organization does. And the opportunity to make a difference to 22 million real people's lives, these are people who are the parents, the uncles and aunts, the people we live with in the streets that we live with. So these are not customer numbers on a spreadsheet. These are people, our customers are real people we live lives with. The opportunity to change their lives is an inspiring opportunity to see the impact of next generation of technologies. And lastly, for me personally, it's an opportunity to work with people who are incredibly sharp and very humble and can together achieve what most people can't do.
One of the important cultural attributes of an organization that is to succeed in the digital age is learning agility, the willingness and curiosity to learn new skills, in the case of IT, learn new technologies and methods. And it strikes me you're somebody who has embodied this. You've, after having an MBA, you've gone back actually and studied at Singularity University, done executive programs there. You've continued your education in ways large and small. I wonder if you can draw from your own experiences, lessons from that, or maybe even advice for fellow executives to make sure that they don't become old dogs that can't learn new tricks.
Yeah, and so I think particularly in our world, it's really important to constantly learn. And the upside of learning is that if you learn, you can beat almost anybody who's an expert in a few years' time. Because whatever they're an expert at will be obsolete in a few years. So if you learn something new, you beat them. And I love our profession. I'm incredibly lucky that there's a huge overlap between what I enjoy doing, what is my hobby, and what is my profession. And that means I constantly learn. Over the weekend, I was coding on OpenCV and Python, using Homebrew on the Mac OS. And yesterday, listening to Apple's WWDC updates, I was on Apple Developer Connection, downloading Xcode's latest version 10, and looking at what is new in that. It's just curiosity to go explore and be hands-on. That also helps me connect with the reality of the teams I lead so that I can support them better. Because for me, knowing of a subject matter expert makes me so much better at supporting people by understanding what would be of help to them to achieve bigger, better outcomes. And learning is so much fun. I'm delighted we are in today's age because learning online, there are so many resources. I feel incredibly lucky and look forward to learning from other organizations. We particularly welcome Fortune 100 and FTSE 100 organizations to come and learn from us, from our journey, because we learn from them in return.
Well, Mayank Prakash, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Peter, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Bask Iyer, the Chief Information and Digital Officer of Dell Digital and VMware.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.